and welcome to another episode of We the People Radio. Today was truly an episode.
It was.
In addition to some scheduling.
It was a challenge.
Some scheduling challenges. We had a flood right before we left.
Had a renegade coffee pot.
Yeah, found out
spit
the coffee
all
pot.
Over the floor.
He kept refilling it. Yeah, because it was actually putting the water behind the cabinet. So that was really handy. I really enjoyed that. So today we won't be on Skype. Yay. That worked out. Okay.
So who are you?
So you can find everything about our show at wethepeopleradio.us. So I thought I'd get that out there first before something else happened. And my name is Aaron Ryan.
And my name is Bill Cundiff. I'm glad to be here.
You're lucky to be here.
I'm lucky to be here. Hey, our sponsor this hour is Pape Machinery, our local John Deere ag and turf dealer. They're located up at 3119 Twinview Boulevard in Shasta Lake City. Go by and see them for John Deere tractors, implements, mowers. They've got a full line of steel products in stock and ready to go. So if you need to do a little yard trimming or edging or chainsawing, you name it, they got it in stock up there. Go by and see them or give them a call at 226-9226 or catch them on the web at papemachinery.com.
Ta-da.
There you go.
Okay. Now, without any more messing around, just in case something else goes haywire, we have not had Mark Marano on for like 2 years, and Bill's never talked to him. Because last time he was on with our friend Debbie Bacchicalupi back in 2019.
Oh, that's right.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And we taped it while you were at work. So, let's see. I'll give you a little tiny background, and I'm sure you'll catch the gist of it, because I know you have seen Mark on the news a bunch of times. He's the founding editor of the award-winning website ClimateDepot.com, a project of the Committee for a Conservative Tomorrow, CFACT, and the co-author and star of the film Climate Hustle. Best name ever. Climate Hustle. He served as the communications director for Senator James Inhofe and the Senate Environment and Public Works Committee. Marano has appeared on Fox, CNN, CBS, BBC, ABC, all sorts of stuff. Oh, even PBS to debate climate change. I bet that was super, super, super fun. He has a new book out, Green Fraud. It's got Ocasio-Cortez's face plastered all over it with like kind of a greenish hue to it. I don't know if that was accidental. Guessing not. Why the Green New Deal is even worse than you think. And we wanted to have him on Earth Day week. I think, what day is Earth Day this week? It's Mark? 21st? So it's Wednesday. Wednesday is Earth Day.
So, yes, Earth Day. Also the birthday of Vladimir Lenin. Why not?
Yeah, make sure you litter on Earth Day. I've been doing it for 35 years. It's really cathartic.
Don't tell people that.
Kleenex always flies out of my car on Earth Day, just right out the window. Poof, it's like magic. I taught my children how to throw away all the recycles on Earth Day the first time I heard about Earth Day. So I've been a hater for a long time.
Man, I thought I broke you of all
Nope. You got in too late.
Yep.
Too late in the game.
Yep.
So, Mark, where would you like to start today? And is her face green on purpose?
Yeah. You know, I think it was simply a publishing error. That's all that happened with the green tint. I believe it was. You know, I believe it's as her actual skin color is. You know, I don't know.
Yeah, because
she's green tinted.
Oh, yeah, because the color, the green fraud, it's like this algae color. I do hope you go online. The link takes you right to the book, so you can get it. And his other book is awesome, actually, The Politically Incorrect Guide to Climate Change. It is a polar bear surfing. And that's a really good one too. And that was I don't know, we had that show with him back in 2019. But when did that book come out, Mark?
Well, it came out in 2018, but then they updated it in 2019 with a new edition.
Oh, so okay, that must have been what we were talking about.
2 years old.
Perfect.
Yeah, but thank you for having me on today. Yeah, the green fraud. The subtitle is why it's even worse than you think, and the reason it's why it's worse than you think now. There's two reasons, actually. One of them is the COVID-climate connection, and climate has literally borrowing pages now from the COVID lockdowns. And the second reason it's worse than we think is because it was such a disastrous release with AOC in 2019 that the Democrats are so embarrassed by the name Green New Deal that they're doing it all stealth right now through the Biden administration. Every agency is a climate agency. Every executive order is a Green New Deal. Is a Green New Deal sort of hidden thing, and also the infrastructure bill is essentially a Green New Deal spending bill with mandates in it like a Green New Deal. So what's happened is they've gone underground. They're using deceit, trickery, stealth, hiding their true intentions. And they have the excitement of building upon the momentum of the lockdowns, which shut down our economy. And all the climate activists basically say, if we can shut down the economy and our society for a virus, we can do the same for climate. John Kerry says that the parallels are screaming at us. So that's why it's worse than we think.
Because it's all infrastructure.
These guys are exhausting. Part of my lack of coordination this week was dealing with the Klamath project up there. And, I mean, if this isn't, this is good for your hustle movie if you make Climate Hustle number, I think three. You have two, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, if you do three, maybe you could explain to people how last year they had 460,000 acre-feet stored water that belonged to the farmers that they owned. But the Bureau of Reclamation would only give them 140 because it was a drought. And this year, they have 333,000 acre-feet stored, and they're going to get 2,000 acre-feet.
Yeah.
Because it's a drought.
Well, actually, the Klamath River, that's actually a very good analogy for what I talk about in the book, because essentially, the Green New Deal is essentially a takeover of more and more aspects of your life, in fact, almost every key aspect, by government bureaucrats and government bureaucracies. And what you're describing there with how they meter out the water and they make these decisions without any rational basis, that's how it's going to be with more and more aspects of your life. And I go through everything from your home appliances to your thermostat control to whether you'll be able to own a car. There's proposals now, Green New Deal-style proposals that will abolish private car ownership, get rid of the internal combustion engine, and instead everyone will be forced to rely on a roving fleet of electric rental cars.
And then, of course, flying.
There was flight shaming before. You're not going to be able to fly unless it's morally justifiable in a climate emergency.
Well, I saw.
And we've already had Chuck Schumer saying, let's declare a national climate emergency to give Biden those kind of powers that they have with COVID emergency.
Yeah, I saw Katie Hopkins yesterday, and she was telling everybody, for one thing, she was able to get out of the UK only because Congressman LaMalfa wrote a letter to Parliament, and then a member of Parliament concurred, so she was able to leave England, because apparently in England you can't go more than 7 miles from your house, and yes, the police are pulling people over and issuing $300 tickets if you have exceeded your radius, as it were. She said, the cars, during the lockdown, I guess they plowed up a bunch of the roads, turned them into bike paths, and they're slated to be out of cars in 2 years.
Yeah, they're doing it this many different ways. A, they're doing it through vehicle efficiency, corporate average fuel economy standards. They're also doing it through just phasing out the internal combustion engine. They're also doing it through electric car mandates. And they're coming after individual car ownership. This is part of the whole mantra. I mean, they want us. I mean, Andrew Yang is now likely to win New York City mayor as a Democrat presidential candidate.
No.
He actually proposed this idea of abolishing car ownership. We have Elizabeth Warren has proposed abolishing, not allowing new homes to be built unless they're, quote, zero carbon footprint is the exact quote. So imagine the amount of bureaucracy you already have to deal with to do construction. Imagine adding that now, adding that climate emissions into that. We have it affecting banks. You know, now you're not going to be, if you're a lending institution, if you want to borrow money for energy projects or for any kind of energy extraction, anything to do with fossil fuels, you're going to have a lower social credit score. We're modeling ourselves after the Chinese. And I go through in the book and explain the COVID lockdowns were, and Jane Fonda's words, who I quote and interviewed, God's gift to the left, the lockdowns, because we now have government and people accepting this, by and large, across our society, telling you when you can leave your house, your stay-at-home orders, you're under curfew, how many people you can have at a backyard barbecue, you could lose your utility, your water will be shut off, your electricity if you violate it, you can't fly in an airplane now without vaccine passports they're proposing, you can't travel, you can't go to a concert without. Every aspect of your life is going to be determined. You're going to be sniffed out by a government bureaucrat to see if you're worthy and it's essential or morally justifiable in the case of flying. This is what we're dealing with, and that's why the Green New Deal is worse than you think, because the merging of COVID and climate is a marriage made in authoritarianism, in tyranny, and that's what the book is really about. when you you know, get past the green tinted cover of AOC.
Well, the good news is if you are going to build a new home, you will have a choice as to whether or not you'll have a double or single thatched roof and either dirt or clay floor. So, I mean, you'll have some options to go with.
Yeah, you can burn a dung inside.
That's right.
And plaster your walls with that. Or
that's right. That's absolutely right. Oh boy.
Well, yeah. If you want a sneak preview of how we'll be living, you could just go up to just miles and miles and miles of illegal marijuana grows up in Siskiyou County, and you can look at their little shacks. They've got the 5-gallon bucket in there for the toilet.
Oh, that's awesome. There's no carbon footprint there.
Nope. They got the puppy tied up out front that's chewing on a container of chemicals. It's really, it's literally third world. And I know that's what they would love.
Well, that's what they're looking at. I mean, here's the thing, and I make this argument in the book. If we actually faced a climate emergency, if we actually had 10 years left to solve it.
Right. Every 10 years.
Last thing. I go into that, by the way. 1864 was the first climate tipping point that I could find. A 19th century academic in 1864 warned of climatic excess unless we changed our ways. So this has been out there for years.
Well, we only have 10 years left. I mean, according to the AOC.
That's right. I go through and show you in the UN in the 1990s, 10-year tipping points. I go through Prince Charles, who had 100-month tipping point and then counted it down. And then at the end of the countdown, he gave us like another 40 years on top of that. You know, they're just like some kind of doomsday preacher who, once it expires, they just put a new deadline and keep preaching the same thing. I mean, there's no end to this. But I go through and explain, if we actually face this climate emergency, the last thing we would want to do is a centralized planning, sovereignty-limiting Green New Deal with bureaucrats take over every aspect of society and monitor, meter, just like a lockdown. It would be the opposite. And I point out in the book that the opposite was happening under the Trump administration. We were energy not only independent for the first time, but energy dominant for the first time since Harry Truman was president. And we broke all sorts of records for oil, gas production, for domestic production, for having more domestic exports and imports. None of this had happened since the 1950s during Harry Truman and the Eisenhower's administration. We were facing no more wars in the Middle East over oil, no more relying on countries that had no environmental standards for our energy. And Biden now is literally every day we speak throwing all that out. Is going to make us more dependent, not just on Middle Eastern oil, but on Chinese rare earth mining, which we can't mine here in America. And we're going to be relying on Chinese companies in Africa mining cobalt so we can have, and other rare earth metals, so we can have our electric cars, our solar panels, and our windmills. This is what we're facing. We've tossed it all out, and we're going to be now energy dependent, not just again, but much worse than we ever were.
And the mining is in a lot of those places is being basically done by slaves, and most of those are, well, many of those, how about that, are children. So
yes, I have a whole thing in there about the cobalt in Africa. These are Chinese companies. First of all, whenever you do a carbon tax, a Green New Deal, any kind of repression of your own industry, like in a country like America or Canada or Europe, all you're doing is increasing CO2 emissions, which you're stating that you don't want to do. Because all it means is you're outsourcing your energy to places without the same environmental standards. And as you mentioned, Aaron, in Africa, Amnesty International details all the child labor violations, all the environmental violations happening in Africa. I mean, they are exploiting Africa and Africans for profit. And this is where China is laughing all the way when it comes to the whole climate agenda. China's all in as they build on average one new coal plant a week. They get praised by the climate activists. And John Kerry is falling all over himself to go cut a deal with China here in the next few months.
Yeah, who would have thought we'd have Lurch back in the driver's seat? So great seeing him fade away. We have to take a really quick break. We're going to be back with our guest, Mark Morano, who has graciously come on with us on a Sunday afternoon. You are listening to We the People. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
What shall we do about them? When they move into your neighborhood, they take over but good. They want you all body and
I know you were listening to those promotions, Mark, and you were thinking, how do I get on that progressive radio show? Because they would love me. Because that's what I was thinking.
I'm thinking he's not going to get that call, but hey, you know.
You never know.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. So, you know, honestly, I am kind of curious. When you go on like MSNBC and stuff like that, how does that go?
I've been on actually many times on ABC, MSNBC, CNN, BBC. But what's happened in the last 4 years, or actually since Trump's election, all of it stopped because the media said we can no longer tolerate these positions. We can't give them any oxygen. But no, I actually got to go on and debate Bill Nye in prime time years ago. And it went very well. And most of the observers thought Bill Nye lost that debate handily because he was not prepared to actually what climate activists like Bill Nye and others debate. Isn't actually, they don't debate science, they debate the science. And the science is defined as having a solution that's more important than the science underneath it, so it's about creating a narrative. So what most activists, when they come up, have only talking points. Well, 97% of scientists, and I go through and explain how that's literally pulled from thin air, and it's based on no data whatsoever in the study that it claimed, and other studies have anonymous sources. Anyway, it's an incredible. So I love debating, and it's a rare and a treat that I can actually get a chance to do it today. But most of those networks, you know, I remember MSNBC was very angry with me after one of my appearances, and then it got to the point, and this has actually happened to me, where I was scheduled for many debates on these networks, whether it was Al Jazeera, China TV, CNN, and right up to the point where I'd show up at the studio, the other person I was debating from the Sierra Club or other group would back out at the last minute. I went through that for years and then finally stopped getting any invites at all on those networks.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, you're trouble.
Because they're totally there to educate. They want to educate, so let's get all the information out there. Hey, what is the scoop on that 97% of the scientists? Because they throw that out there all the time.
Yeah, and that point is designed so you don't have to think about it. You know, in other words, you just say that number, and therefore you don't need to know an ounce of anything about climate. All you have to do is say that. And I actually feature in my book, I interviewed the lead United Nations author, Dr. Richard Toll, who did a study examining it. And he says that it was pulled from thin air. None of the data in the study support the idea of 97%. And then I looked at some of the other claims in 97. By the way, Al Gore just changed it verbally with no citation to 99% of all scientists.
Oh, it's going up.
Of course. To make it more realistic.
But what they did is they got a survey of 10,000 plus scientists, whittled it down to 77 scientists. And this was just an old survey that they had. And they didn't release the names of the scientists, their affiliation, any exact quotes. All they did was ask them two questions. Is the Earth warm? Do humans contribute? And most skeptical scientists would agree with that. That's the other basis for this alleged 97%. But its real point is to try to silence people from debating or arguing. And I go through all of that in the book. I go through all the wackiness. I go through the kids' propaganda. We have Greta Thunberg and kids indoctrinated from kindergarten through college on this, you know, climate doom, and they're now suing the federal government and the United States in federal district court, saying that the government needs to act to protect the climate, their future. They need to protect them from the changing climate. This is what the state of our kids' education. I go through the whole movement, who's funding them, how Greta Thunberg phenomena happened, and then I also go in a whole chapter on identity politics invading the climate debate. Did you know that the Aborigines in the 19th century were the original woke set? They blamed the change of the climate in Australia, indigenous people in Australia, they blamed the change of weather on the introduction of the white man in Australia. And I actually have that cited from, I think it's 1846. So all these woke people in academia today, they're now blaming white Americans and white supremacy for climate change, and I go into that. But this is an old story, centuries old it's been going on. And I feature NASA scientists in this book who are supposed to be looking at climate data, instead are talking about how white supremacy is causing climate change. These are leading divisions of NASA climate sciences. It's all been corrupted.
That's amazing. That's amazing. It always comes back to that, too. I mean, when they run out of talking points, it goes back to white supremacy.
Anymore. That's the answer to everything.
Yeah.
I had a really good meme about that. I'm going to look that up while we're talking. Because it was a keeper.
Even worse, They're now saying math is racist. We have professors saying that data is racist. You can't rely on data because it was collected either by white men or using white systems. I mean, it's you can't even argue science anymore.
And that's right. I forgot about that. That's right. Math is...
Well, math is the big one now. It's like that's a total white supremacist thing. Math is not an absolute anymore. It's
Because here you go. Somebody, some snappy person made a meme. If we divide 123 genders by white supremacy, how much climate change do we have?
There you go.
You could use that in your next debate there. And they'll be like, well, let me see.
Yeah. Well, actually, at Climate Depot, the data is racist. Rhode Island professor denounces science, statistics, and technology as, quote, inherently racist. This is what we're dealing with here. So this is part of what you have. And I go in the book and I quote, in Africa, there was a cyclone Idai, which hit Africa in 2019. And the quote was, this was the Black Lives Matter group, basically, in Africa, even the white man's own science corroborates what we blacks know. And this is, you know, this is how the climate debate is morphing. Just a few years ago, in my first book, Politically Incorrect Guide to Climate Change, I detailed how they no longer looked at polar bears or ice or temperature as how to measure global warming. The new metric was rape, vehicle thefts, crime rates, and they were saying as global warming heated up, crime would go through the roof. So that's what they're switched everything. And by the way, I point out in Green Fraud, polar bears are disappearing, and it's shocking, but they're disappearing from Al Gore's books and movies. And I talk about how Al Gore's first film made it the icon, but now they have more polar bears than they've ever counted. They're at historic population highs. So how does Al Gore deal with that? They dropped out of both his film book sequel and his movie sequel in 2017.
He doesn't talk about them anymore?
He doesn't talk about polar bears at all.
Oh.
I mean, other than the way they make, he literally omitted them in both the book and movie in his sequel after they were such an iconic part of his first one, warning of all the disappearing ice and the polar bears disappearing. It's amazing. Here's how they still get you, though, the climate actors. They'll say, it's worse than we thought for polar bears. You're like, how? Polar bears, not only have they survived much less periods of ice than you're even predicting, but their numbers are at or historic population highs. They're thriving. And the answer is that they'll say it's worse than we thought because our predictions now of the year 2080 are much worse than they were just 5 years ago. So when current reality fails to alarm, they make scarier and scarier predictions.
Yeah.
It's an old misdirection, you know.
Oh,
don't
yeah.
look here at reality. Look at this new scary prediction. We're all doomed. We need a Green New Deal.
Well, in the CNN interviews with Project Veritas, I mean, that kind of blew a hole in their deal. It's like, you know, the virus scare, we've got to morph out of that. People aren't listening anymore. I mean,
yeah, but who got to see that? I mean, Twitter and YouTube suspended it. No one got to see that video. I don't even know what you're talking about.
Hey, 99% of the people saw that.
That was a myth.
99% of the people saw that.
Yeah. Yeah, and by the way, that is, on that point, very important part of Green Fraud.
Yeah.
CNN is famous for what when it comes to COVID? Having the nonstop death ticker on
yes.
the screen. And I believe the same director actually talked about they'd get phone calls, presumably from the head of CNN demanding that they put the screen back up. You know, when the content got boring on screen, they'd put the COVID death toll up on screen. Well, are you ready for this? And I unveil this in the book. COVID death tolls have inspired the climate change movement. There is now calls for adding climate change to death certificates. And I go in great detail in the book on this. If you die now, they can add cause of death, climate change. And are you ready for this? The American Cancer Society says cancer is worse because of climate change. The Department of Transportation under Obama did studies saying that fatal car accidents were going to go up because of global warming. Al Gore has claimed every organ in your body is affected by climate change. So if you die in a fatal car crash of cancer or of organ failure, guess what can be put now on your death certificate as cause of death? Guess what CNN could have a daily ticker in a climate emergency countdown to the Green New Deal, the climate change death toll. Guess what Bill Gates said? One last point. Bill Gates said the death toll from climate change will far exceed anything from COVID-19.
Well, it's very, very difficult. It's difficult to argue that, though. I mean, if you check all these people
do,
that die,
taken off the air.
That's exactly it.
But you'll notice that, and coincidence maybe, but every one of those people that died were colder. So there you go.
We're cold. That's right.
They're climate changed.
They're climate changed.
Oh, Bill. Yeah. Bill,
by
that
the way,
was
that
dark,
was
Bill.
Blizzards and snow was a thing of the past, and I detail that where the idea is, you know, snow is going to be a thing of the past. Children won't know what snow is. I got my daughter a sled. UN scientists saying this, and now there's no snow for them to play in. That was in the late 90s, early 2000s. Then we have the snowiest decade on record on the East Coast. We have blizzard after blizzard, record cold. What do they say? Al Gore comes out and says, record cold and snow is exactly what we'd expect. That's the change. That's the climate change. That's part of extreme weather. They literally predicted both outcomes. And that's what I do. When I do a presentation, I go through probably 30 or 40 different topics of prediction, whether it's hurricanes, floods, tornadoes, more floods, less floods, more tornadoes, less tornadoes, more hurricanes, less hurricanes, more malaria, less malaria, more fog, less fog, more snow, less snow. And I go through, they've literally been in 30-some years of climate predictions, or 40-some years, they've been on every side of an issue. So if you have a Super Bowl and you bet on both teams to win, the next day at Monday at work, you could be claiming, hey, I predicted it. I predicted the winner. I was
right.
I have good analytical skills. That's what they've done on this issue. And I keep adding more. Almost every issue that happens, they've predicted both sides. They can always claim the models were correct. We were accurate. When it comes to temperature models, they get like a shotgun blast of different ranges. No matter what happens, they can always go back. Our model in 1994 predicted this exact temperature trend. It is horse bleep from beginning to end. This is what we're dealing with, and I'd like to spend some time, a little bit of time, on telling you how screwed we are with Republican leadership on this issue as well. We are flailing and losing with anyone in power right now.
You know, and the hard part is when it comes to some of this stuff, it's like, because it's a third rail deal, nobody wants to bring it up. You know, it's like, let's just not, you know, the gender thing is perfect. You know, somehow we've allowed them to turn the word gender into meaning male or female. Well, it's not what it means. And if you look it up, it isn't what it means. Sex means male or female. That's what sex you are. There are only two of those. But now, you know, everybody's kind of silent on it. We don't want to really bring that up. And the climate thing is the exact same deal. They've changed that around. They did that the way they did the COVID stats, too. Remember at the beginning? It was how many people died? Then it was like, how many people got tested? Well, who cares? I mean, that's like counting how many cars are on the road and comparing that to how many drunk drivers there are. How do you know that?
Yeah, the best thing on COVID, the best summation is a guy goes to his doctor and says, hey, doctor, when is this COVID pandemic going to end? And the doctor's answer is, how should I know? I'm not a politician. Because that's exactly what it did. It comes down to how public health bureaucracy manipulated the test results, how many cycles to get a positive, and what the positive meant, and also how many cases you tested, how often you tested, where you targeted those test cases, how you reported them. And then, of course, you know, and this goes back to the whole idea of the science. Science becomes the science and becomes you can't challenge it when the solution is more important than the solution is so coveted by by the activists. And what they wanted at the time was full bureaucratic control, full lockdowns to continue. And even now with the vaccine, the reason we're having this vaccine, because it didn't go through years of trial, tested for side effects, or you can't even really call it a vaccine, it's experimental gene therapy, but the reason we're having that now is because we're still under a COVID emergency. If they de-declare or undeclare, I don't know what the right word there is, the emergency and the emergency, then you can't give it, you can't keep distributing the vaccine, because there's no, you have to change all the laws and rules and have public debate.
I didn't even think about this.
And this is, same thing happens in climate. I just went through, they changed the way you measure climate. Again, used to be temperature, then it became, let's talk about polar bears, then it became, let's talk about crime, rape, let's talk about airline turbulence, and now it's become, you know, white supremacy, and, you know, did you die of organ failure? Did you die in a car crash? Let's put that in your death certificate. It's constantly evolving.
Yeah. And the good news is, with all the COVID stuff, is we did cure the common flu. I mean, so that's
the seasonal flu? Yeah.
You think that would be the biggest eye-opener? And again, I spent two chapters in the book on the COVID-climate connection, but the idea that the flu has now just disappeared, and I love the one hand they say, well, it's because we've been all wearing masks, we've killed the flu, see, this is how we need to do it all the time. And then the same person will turn around and say, the reason that COVID is still an emergency is because people aren't wearing their masks. You're not wearing them long enough. Shame on you.
Yeah, they get it both ways.
When we were kids, you know, if you tried to argue these points, or you tried to write a paper that, you know, that was on all sides of the issue at the exact same time, you couldn't pass the class. And somehow now this is the class.
Exactly.
I don't know when that happened.
Basically, what's happened is, and I go into this, the first chapter of Green Fraud. It was a lot of fun because I talk about I had a congressional hearing, and I actually got the opportunity to go against a former United Nations climate chief. And I go in great detail, and I reprint all the last 2.5 decades of my life, I put into that testimony. And I explain that this is all about narrative building. This is not science. I turned to the guy and I said, you are not a scientist. You are a science bureaucrat. This is not something coming from science. And I go through great detail how the United Nations, when it comes to climate, and it's exactly applicable to COVID, they pick a narrative, and they don't allow studies, sciences, journals, any kind of peer review, anything to counter it. They don't. If you do counter it, I detail how they deplatform you, they defund you, they silence you, and they intimidate you. And this is exactly what's happening in the climate community for decades. And now, and then I detail how in the COVID community, we now have doctors who signed the Great Barrington Declaration against the COVID lockdowns, against COVID hysteria. They were deplatformed, defunded, intimidated, trashed, losing jobs. And the same thing happens. One of the Nobel Prize-winning chemists was invited to a scientific conference. He was disinvited because of his views on lockdowns, not because of his views on science or COVID, but because he didn't support political lockdowns recommended by the WHO and the CDC.
Wow.
This is what happens in this whole it is not anywhere near. So whenever you hear someone say, listen to the science, run like bleep hell, because that is the number one sign that they are, you know, literally not following the science.
And they're not actually going to. They have no intention of using the science. We'll be right back.
Yeah, they're just using that name of it.
Hey,
yeah.
When we come back, Mark, I know we talked about it when you were on with Debbie before, but I'd love to hear a little bit about. I know you go to all the UN conferences and stuff, and you guys have a pretty good time with that. I think people would like to see a little bit behind the curtain about what goes on with those, because they sound like not very serious scientific conferences.
Sure.
But that's
right.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And the costumes that you all wear, because that's a high point for me. I really like that part. All right, we'll be right back. Our guest is Mark Moreto from Climate Depot. And if you have not read his book, Green Fraud, or gotten it yet, you should hurry, because Amazon's thinking about banning it because Bill Gates doesn't like it and a bunch of other people are mad. But you can find all that information here at WeThePeopleRadio.us.
So don't delay, act now, supplies are running out. Allow if you're still alive, 6 to 8 years to arrive. And if you follow the myth, be on tomorrow. But if the offer's shunned, you might as well be walking on the sun. You might as well be walking on the sun. You might as well be walking on the sun.
Yeah, the Twilight Zone. So when you go on the conferences, Mark, they all fly in and all that, right? They're not all wearing hemp and riding on camels, right?
Yeah, in fact, a couple of things about these conferences. Yeah, Debbie has joined CFAC many times over the years, all over the world. And what's happened at these, the private airplanes, the private airports fill up with private jets. That's
sure.
One of the things. There have actually been articles about chefs being flown in for the world leaders. I remember going to the Johannesburg South African in South Africa, and they talked about the chefs being flown in, caviar, champagne, all the expensive food. As they celebrated to talk about world poverty and the climate emergency, they would be living it up. These UN conferences are giant parties. They are massive, environmentally destructive. There have been estimates that they use, when they have them, particularly like in African nations, they use more energy for the two-week UN climate summit than African nations can do in an entire year, or at least several, you know, half a year. That's how much energy and that they produce. And the thing is, they really don't accomplish a darn thing. All they do is, it's just basically a bunch of grandstanding. All these diplomats come in, world leaders, Hollywood celebrities. I interviewed the last one I went to in Madrid. I got to interview Harrison Ford. He was there. And, you know, it's a good case in point, Harrison Ford. He was there promoting the idea of the climate emergency and getting a UN deal and restricting, you know, our human activity. So I asked him a simple question. He had bragged a few years earlier about he's a private pilot, flies his airplane around a lot. And you know it's not a cheap plane, it's a private plane. Sure. And he said sometimes he flies up the coast just to get a hamburger. So I asked him if he still flies up the coast to get a hamburger, and his answer to me was, I'm a vegetarian now, or I'm a vegan, or whatever. He doesn't eat meat anymore. So the answer to that is, okay, so do you fly up to get your fake meat burger up the coast if you do that? But he wouldn't answer any further questions. But that's what happens. These are big conferences. All the Hollywood activists show up. Leonardo DiCaprio's been there, Al Gore, and it's just a giant thing. Now, a couple things we've done. I've dressed as Santa Claus. I've dressed up as Louis the 14th at these conferences, but also we did the greatest achievement, I think, was I stood next to a cardboard cutout of Trump in 2016, right after he won the election in Morocco, in Morocco at the UN Climate Summit. This was in 2017, November. And I started shredding the UN Paris Agreement, saying this is what President Trump's going to do within minutes. I was outside the press. Other people had same kind of impromptu talks. Within minutes, security swarmed me, armed United Nations climate, seized my briefcase. They escorted me roughly outside of the conference. I was tossed out into the desert behind this makeshift conference building, had to walk through the desert in a full suit. And when I got to this parking lot, then UN armed climate cops reapproached me and confiscated my papers out of my briefcase. This is what I was dealing with, all for having the cardboard cut out and shredding their sacred text, their holy text, the UN climate, the Paris Agreement. So that's some of the stuff. That's some of the fun that we have at these UN climate.
And I remember Debbie was dressed as a pig one time. Why was she dressed as a pig? I think that was just.
I think it was just
all the waste, the waste and fraud and abuse. But she ran around in a pig outfit the whole time. I'm like, wow, these conferences actually look fun.
And we've had people in polar bear costumes, and we've done all the time. We just go to basically to make fun of these conferences. And by the way, after I got thrown out of that, it was me and Craig Rucker, a CFAC. We had to, basically we were banned for life from the UN conference, but we had to get that reinstated. So a year later, I had to go in and sign a paper saying I'd been a bad boy and I apologized and wouldn't do anything like that again. So we could continue to have access.
Until next time. that's one thing with these guys. They have no sense of humor whatsoever. Because I've asked before.
It's deadly serious.
We had.
Don't joke around.
Leighton Stewart was on with us, I mean, a long time ago when we first started the show, probably 9 years ago. And he had said.
Featured in my first film. He's featured in my first film.
I love that guy. I got to look him up again. He was so much fun to talk to. But he had told us the thing about the CO2, and I've never forgotten it. Where he said, well, if CO2 is a pollutant, then every time, and we have 400 parts per million of CO2 in regular air, but then when we breathe into somebody doing mouth-to-mouth resuscitation, that's 40,000 parts per million. He goes, how come they don't all die? And I was like, oh, my gosh, you're right. I have asked that, I can't even tell you how many times, to bureaucrats who are into this kind of thing or, you know, people who think that the climate change, the CO2 is really toxic, and I ask them, you think it's a pollutant, blah, 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 we go through that. To a person, every single time, they say, oh, that's different.
That's different.
CO2. I'm like, is that...
That's not the same
like
kind of CO2.
Yeah, this happened under Obama. They decided to regulate CO2 as a pollutant. So we inhale oxygen as humans. We exhale carbon dioxide, as you mentioned. So that makes us all toxic, you know, essentially polluters that need to be regulated by the government. And by the way, what does a lockdown do but regulate human activity? So it's the ideal thing. That's why I keep coming back to this theme. COVID lockdown morphs to climate lockdown. And that's literally what we are facing. And I go through the two chapters will be eye-opener. And then you get, you know, Republicans on Capitol Hill are not ready for the onslaught that's about to happen here. And it's not going to happen frontally, meaning it's not going to be big brassy hearings in Congress and legislation. This is going to happen behind the scenes. If Chuck Schumer gets his way and we declare a national climate emergency, which I think Biden's holding off on for the moment, but we are looking at every aspect from cars to home energy to appliances to our diets. I detail how the whole movement is to get us off eating meat, to skyrocket the cost of meat. They're bragging about that. They want us to eat fake synthetic meat made of like 27 different vegetable oils and processed chemicals. And even CNN nutritionists are saying these fake meat burgers aren't even close to being healthy. You're much better off eating a lean beef or turkey burger or something like that. And they want us to eat insects, too. I go into great detail on that. But on every aspect of this, they were inspired and jealous of the climate lockdown, of the COVID lockdowns. And this is what they want, stay at home, low emissions. At these UN summits we talked about, they would brag about planning for decades. And in the first book, I detailed all my encounters about planned recessions for global warming, the degrowth movement. Well, what is a lockdown but a planned recession by the government? Mm-hmm. So this is part of how the lockdowns were praised so much, they reduced CO2 emissions 7% in 2020, right? Global emissions are from all industry because everything was shut down from transportation, airlines, industry. So what happened? They now, UK Guardian peer-reviewed studies now are out. They're saying if we could have a lockdown every 2 years, we could meet our UN climate goals. Isn't that wonderful? All we need to do is lock down every other year, and we can have our climate goals met.
We're almost there. We're facing. Yeah, yeah.
And we have morons like Senator Lindsey Graham just this week in Washington. I believe climate is real. The weather is changing, and humans are responsible, and you're not going to call me a denier. This is what we're facing on Capitol Hill. The Republicans are terrified to challenge this narrative.
Hmm. I know one that in a our congressman here in a debate is down in Chico by the university, so you can tell how well this went over. They asked him, do you believe in climate change? And he said, well, as a matter of fact, I do. I believe it changes about four times a year, and I believe what we're going into now is something we call autumn. And there was a guy sitting by me in the back, and he like screams out, he's unfit to lead.
Boy, that's the most fit. That's awesome. That's a great way to handle it. Because, I go through, someone says, is the globe warming? Are you a denier? Okay.
Yes.
Well, since 1850, when thermometers came on, we were in the height of the Little Ice Age when New York Harbor froze over, the Thames River in England. We were a very cold period. So, yes, we've warmed the last 150 years. Then you say, okay, well, what about the medieval warm period ended in 1300? We probably stayed the same or slightly cooled since the medieval warm period. If you go back to the Roman warming period of 0 AD, we probably cooled most definitely based on all the peer-reviewed studies. I mean, this is what it is. You have to look at time. So as you go back further in the geologic history, we're in 10% coldest part of Earth's history. In other words, 90% of Earth's history was too warm to have ice at either pole. And we're also in one of the lowest periods of CO2 levels in Earth's history. One scientist, Will Happer, calls it a CO2 famine that we're currently in. So this is,
the Industrial Revolution theory in the head, doesn't
it? Well, besides that, you know, they've said that the planet has greened. Well, I learned in sixth grade or maybe sooner that, you know, CO2 makes plants grow. So why is that a bad thing?
I detail that in the book. Even NASA was forced to admit studies since at least the last 40 years, 35 years, the greening of the planet Earth, which they're attributing to rising CO2 levels. It's a boon for the atmosphere, boon for the biosphere. Now, how do you negatively spin that? Here's how. This is acknowledged in the mainstream media and different studies from academia. Global warming will mean more weeds! Invasive species and weeds are going to grow as CO2 rises. In other words, all agriculture and our biosphere is going to benefit. But what does the media focus on when a study like this comes out? That weeds are going to be more healthy and taking over everything.
That is a desperate,
Look for that dark lining.
Oh my God. Well, and up here, what we see is, they want to talk about the drought, but like I said at the beginning, how do you take 333,000 acre feet, give the farmers 2 acre feet, blow the rest of it down the river for the fish, supposedly, except it actually makes the fish die, and call that a drought?
Yeah.
But if none of the farmers can farm, guess where all our money goes? you know, to keep their land payments going and all that. Oh, and meanwhile, at the same time up there, the Bureau of Reclamation has 60 employees. Almost passed out when I heard that. I thought they had like five. I've only ever seen five. There are 60 employees there. And this year, while the farmers get zero water and still have to make their payments to the Bureau, they are...
They're
going to build a new building.
This is what you're describing is exactly what we're dealing with this whole green, the whole title of my book and the whole book. It's because it's turning over your life to insane, illogical government bureaucracy, which you have no control over.
Yep.
And even politicians have no control over once this gets started. I mean, this is what we're dealing with on every aspect. So it's going to be whether how much meat you bought this week, how many miles you traveled. They're already talking about tracking that, whether you can fly in it. But you can't go to Florida. You just went last year. Unless it's for a funeral, we can't authorize it. You've already used your, I talk about your carbon credits. Your carbon share. There's a proposal in Europe for a CO2 credit for every man, woman, and child on the planet, a CO2 ration card that monitors your energy use, home energy use, travel. And the idea is it's like a Chinese social credit score, which is also coming. The idea is if you're a good citizen and you keep within your carbon footprint and you don't say anything against wokeism and you're not a climate denier, you get a high credit score and you follow all the health mandates and you socially distance and you don't have backyard barbecues or you haven't attended a funeral with too many people or been to a wedding, then you're going to get a high score. You're going to be front of the line. You're going to get, you're going to get your universal basic income check quicker than the next guy. This is what's happening, and that's the other thing, is the universal basic income. They've collapsed the economy. This is what they love. This is what they've been seeking, and now they get to rebuild it, part of the Great Reset, this great, they're going to rebuild it in their green image, and that's what we're facing right now. And again, clueless Republicans aren't going to save us. This has to come from the public. In the book, I detail how the Berlin Wall didn't come down because the East German Parliament decided to end tyranny. It came down because the people of East Germany no longer gave their consent to live under tyranny. And that's what's got to happen in the United States. And it's not going to be Republicans on Capitol Hill that save us. We have to defy mass resistance, starting with the COVID mandates and then moving over to the climate mandates. We have to fight back on this at every level of government.
Everything about this is that same smoke and mirror thing, you know, and you've got kids pushing all of it. That's the part that pisses me off. Like, you know what Katie was telling us yesterday in England? Her kids, she said, you know, just of their own volition, they decided not to get the, mandated experimental injection there. And they have to wear a sticker on their shirt at school that says, I don't care about my classmates.
Wow, what's that sound like?
Can you imagine that?
Yeah, I mean, this is from China's Communist Party. This is exactly, and the whole world is adopting this. Even countries like Israel, who you'd think should know better, are adopting this same kind of sort of vaccine passport and shaming system. Mm.
It's stunning, absolutely stunning. I don't know how much longer people will go for this, but she said the people in England have just complied. You know, they stay in their little 7-mile circle. They don't go anywhere. Like, you have to get, can you imagine that, special permission to leave your country to actually go somewhere?
Well, it's coming here.
Yeah.
In Spain, they're going to mandate masks at all the outdoor beaches this summer. They've already announced it. Their public health is their number one priority. So imagine that. You go to the beach, you have to wear a mask outside.
Man,
even here, I'm in Virginia.
That's going to screw up the tan.
Boy Scouts. Yeah, exactly. But even here in Virginia, we have friends. I was talking to a friend yesterday who pulled his son out of Boy Scouts because they mandated some vote, a secret vote of the Boy Scout Council, that you had to have masks outside when they went on hikes and did everything for safety. And the parents demanded to know what the vote was, who voted, and they wouldn't tell them.
Oh, that's a shocker. Hey, Mark, we ran out of time. Can you believe it? Mark Morano, we want to have you on again. His book is Green Fraud, Police Litter on Earth Day. Do it for... just suggesting for a friend.
Yeah, for a friend,
thanks.
Yeah.
Thanks, Mark. Good afternoon, and welcome to We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan, and
I'm your co-host, Debbie Bacigalupi.
Bill is on, we're going to have Bill on assignment. That's a story. Bill's on assignment today.
I guess you'll have to listen in next week to find out where he went.
Find out where Bill went. Which means I'm doing the sponsor this hour is Team Power. Team Power is your local Kubota and John Deere dealer serving Shasta, Siskiyou, Tehama, and Trinity counties. They're a certified dealer for tractors, utility vehicles, turf equipment, and they also carry a full line of implements to help you tackle any job. Dealership offers well-staffed parts and service departments. And you can find Bill there. See, Bill does never say that in the commercial, but you can find Bill there. You can reach them at 530-226-9226, and they are located at 3119 Twin View Boulevard in Shasta Lake City, just south of Phil's Propeller.
You know you're in rural America when they're selling tractors.
Exactly. Tractors, boats,
SUVs.
We're right by a lake that's 25 miles long and a mountain that's 14,000 feet high. So, you know, might as well get out and do some stuff.
Like all the equipment that Alexandria O-Communist would love to get rid of.
Pretty much. We've got it all. So go get it serviced at Team Power. Your mower blades need sharpening. I know that already. And for heaven's sakes, cut the tall grass so we can stop having all these fires. And that's mostly all. So our guest today.
I'm so excited.
That's why Debbie's here. Our guest today is Mark Morano. He is the CFACT Director of Communications, but he founded ClimateDepot.com. He's the man at ClimateDepot.com.
And you've got to go there. You got to go to that website.
Book is The Politically Incorrect Guide to Climate Change. And the daily cause or coast or whatever they are, the daily KOS. That's a pretty good review, Mark. Actually, it says evil personified.
Yeah. I call it the. Sorry.
So obviously you must be our new best friend.
I call it the golden book of golden nuggets, and it is, and it's available on Audible too. You have to get this book. I listened to it even coming down from the ranch yesterday. I was listening to his book.
Why? She was ready to talk to you yesterday.
Oh my gosh! I'm always ready to talk to this guy.
So, bottom line is we've linked that on the website at wethepeopleradio.us. And we've got his website on there, climatedepot.com. And so now it's all you, Mark.
Thank you, Aaron. Thank you, Debbie. Debbie, good to talk to you again. Thank you for the promotion.
Love you. Easy for me to say. Last night in your Santa suit, giving coal to the UN.
Yes, that's right. Debbie
or Greenpeace.
That was at the Poland UN Climate Summit, and Greenpeace was trying to ban all coal, which obviously didn't go over too well in Poland, because the Polish hosts had a whole tribute to Poland at the entrance of the UN Climate Conference there, so that was a lot of fun. But yeah, needless to say, Greenpeace wasn't receptive to Santa Claus giving them lumps of coal. Some people got upset. Some of them were gracious about it, but we had a lot of fun with that stunt.
Well, you know, and I just found it so hypocritical that here you walk into the building where they were across from where the United Nations meeting was, and, I mean, there's a full-on, full-wall bar with alcohol from the top of the ceiling all the way down, and they've got these...
I'm sure they made it with solar.
These plushy cushions, you know, those bean bags that people are sitting on, and they've got this stage, and like all
probably filled with hemp.
Amazing. All the electricity, the energy that they needed, the resources that they needed from planet Earth to put off their event. But
nobody else.
Yeah. Anyway, sorry, Mark. I just had to throw that in.
Yeah, no, she's right, and Debbie knows this. Well, she's a veteran as well as I am of all these UN climate summits, and they've actually done analysis. You know, when they're usually a lot of the times they're temporary structures. They have diesel generators out there. They're like little mini cities themselves, and when you add in all the private jets and all the Hollywood celebrities and the dignitaries and the foreign leaders that fly into these, they use more energy than like dozens of African nations do in a year just for the two-week conference that they have here. And the one I went to in Johannesburg, South Africa years ago, I think it was the UK Daily Mail, actually did a big expose about all the chefs that they had flown in, and they were preparing champagne, caviar for the world leaders as they sat around and talked about, you know, global poverty and how they were going to solve it with renewable energy and, you know, UN central planning somehow. So these conferences are a sham, and they're one of the reasons climate science scientists love the global warming establishment. I mean, they, when you're a scientist, these are what you get to go to. You know, you get to fly around, and it's not just the ones Debbie and I have been to, not just these big UN climate summits. They have multiple summits throughout the year in all kinds of locations, from Cancun, South America, Africa. They have several lead-up meetings to that where they do reports and other meetings and emission targets and all kinds of things. So this is just a massive United Nations gravy train. And sadly, and I'll end on a down note here, President Trump's administration hasn't done anything really about that. In terms, they have pulled us out or announced the intent to pull out, but they still sent a delegation, and we went to the their meeting at this last UN climate conference in Poland. And the U.S. was very tepid. They were extolling the virtues of fossil fuels, but they totally sidestepped any criticism or any skeptical stance on science. But unfortunately, Donald Trump's administration is still rubber-stamping the U.N., still funding it. The budget that Donald Trump had the first year was fantastic, massive cuts to EPA, but everything was dead on arrival with the GOP Congress. But unfortunately, that still goes on. And so to expand on that just 1 minute here, the global warming movement right now, we are at a serious, serious crossroads. We haven't been this at a crossroads since Al Gore's film first came out in 2007. Right now, President Trump's administration is facing multiple legal challenges on the global warming front. Kids lawsuits, James Hansen, all other kinds of lawsuits against oil companies. The problem is, because of George W. Bush administration, and because thus far President Trump hasn't reversed anything yet through the executive order or challenged it in the courts, what stands as the accepted science is the United Nations ridiculous climate reports that won the Nobel Peace Prize with Al Gore in 2007, the UN IPCC reports, and the National Climate Assessment, which the Trump administration, the abomination the Trump administration allowed to go through. This was a big federal report. The media went nuts. Trump's own scientists disagree with him on global warming more dire. The report was a joke. It was written, coordinated by Andrew Light, Obama's chief UN Paris negotiator, a whole over. It was written, the scientists were Donald Wobbles and Catherine Hayhoe, two activists from the Union of Concerned Scientists. The report read like an environmental press release because it was written by environmental activists in Obama holdovers, but the Trump administration did nothing. So here's the problem. Scientifically, the United States government fully and only recognized National Climate Assessment has been accepted and the UN reports have been accepted. So these federal judges, I can't blame them. When they get these reports, if they're going by federal statutes, they're looking at, you know, the UN reports, National Climate Assessment. They have to start thinking global warming is a threat because there's been no pushback. And sadly, the EPA doesn't look like it's going to do anything. Our greatest hope, now I'll end on hope here, then I'll let you guys ask questions, but our greatest hope right now in the climate movement is the Presidential Climate Commission that potentially will be headed by Dr. Will Happer, Princeton physicist, who said Earth is in a CO2 famine right now and has compared the demonization of carbon dioxide to the way Germany treated a certain ethnic group. I'll try not to go too far into Godwin's law here, where people get, you don't want to make Nazi analogies, but this is most significant. This is the most significant thing that could happen in the climate debate. We are on the cusp of it. We just have to make sure it actually goes through and that no one talks President Trump out of it. So we need this presidential commission that will re-examine the science of the United Nations, push back the National Climate Assessment, and that will set the stage for a review of the CO2 endangerment finding, the horrible judgment back in 2007 that the Supreme Court ruled carbon dioxide was a pollutant and could thus be regulated under the Clean Air Act. This presidential commission, all our hopes hinge on this, because otherwise, the fantastic nature of everything President Trump has done, pulling us out of Paris, reversing Obama's EPA regs, bunch of great energy stuff, making the United States the greatest energy provider in the world, could all be undone if the Democrats win in 2020, because we need to get on record federal commission that the science is wrong to give our legislative regulatory bodies a real clear path, and that's what this commission could potentially represent, and we have to make this happen. So all eyes are on this presidential commission. That's the only thing that matters in the climate debate at the moment in terms of having the most massive impact. So I'm off my soapbox.
Oh, that was all. We liked the soapbox.
We loved it.
That's why we do this show. We find people who have a good soapbox, and then we just like let them come on because we're just listening. Let's take a really quick break here so we don't have to cut off the next soapbox rant. You have like a couple of minutes to think that over.
what that will be. Oh, you are listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
Presentation of We the People Radio, recorded back April 21st of this year.
And then some.
Yeah. You know what? We need more Mark Moranos for sure. And, you know, Mark, I have a question for you. We're with Mark Morano on We the People Radio. I'm Debbie Bocciacalippi. I'm just taking over your show here, Aaron.
Go ahead and do it. Bill just sits over there and doesn't say anything.
And our guest is Mark Morano. He wrote a fabulous book. I've listened to it several times now on Audible. It's called The Politically Incorrect Guide to Climate Change. You could go to CFAC.org and order the book from there. And, of course, it's available on Amazon. And really, you know what? These people who want global warming and want to control our lives don't want you to read this book, because it's the golden book of golden nuggets. And it has so many, like, great things to combat, like the 97%. And of scientists say, and the seas are rising.
Yeah, the whole back. That's like little piggy snouts, which is classic. The world is spending nearly $1 billion a day to prevent global warming. Brilliant. I'm sure that money couldn't be used better somewhere else. A UN scientist has said that 90% consensus on global warming was pulled from thin air.
I mean, I'm not kidding. You go through this book, and it talks about the grant money. It talks about Al Gore. I mean, it's a thick book, but, you know, it's an easy read, and it's scientifically based on, you know, it's got some great, great. But anyway, Mark, I want to know, you were just talking about that our only hope, and I get it because I see what's going on out there and just the propaganda. Our only hope is this commission that is headed by Dr. Will Happer, who is, I believe he went to Yale. He's a Yale professor. But how do people get involved, Mark, to make a difference? Like, how does the average listener, is there anything we could do to help promote this commission?
Yeah, well, one of the things that have been going on, there's been the whole series of scientists, public policy leaders urging the White House, who've signed a public letter urging them to go forward with this. Dr. Patrick Moore, this is interesting. Now, you say he's coming on, or you've already had him on? He's coming on in a couple of days, or when?
Patrick Moore, he will be coming on.
Co-founder.
Yeah, he'll be on next week.
Okay, the co-founder of Greenpeace has gone on Fox News, touted the whole concept of, you know, the climate science being fake news, and also said he was in town to meet with Dr. Happer of this climate commission. This caused all hell to break loose. To give you an idea how important this commission is, immediately, first of all, President Trump tweeted about Patrick Moore on Fox and Friends that day, within the hour or the half hour of him being on. This caused massive media heartache. It caused climate people like Michael Mann to have heart attacks. People were going bonkers. The president is endorsing a climate denier, etc. So a couple things went into play immediately. First of all, Michael Mann went to Newsweek and did a rebuttal to Patrick Moore's claim that global warming is fake science. And
as an aside, real quick, Michael Mann is not our friend, guys.
So yes, sorry about that. Michael Mann is a UN scientist and the inventor of this fraudulent hockey stick temperature graph, which said temperatures were flat until the 20th century when mankind took over control of the climate, essentially. But he went, the climate activists, the inner circle of the UN scientists, they went nuts. So he did a big op-ed at Newsweek, which I then did a point-by-point rebuttal to Michael Mann, and I used all the peer-reviewed sources, data, graphs, and even more, and then Michael Mann tried to, you know, missed my thing, but he had some fun with it, saying that, oh, we must have really struck a nerve with the deniers. But anyway, the key thing that happened was, before Patrick Moore went on Fox and Friends, and before President Trump tweeted that climate was fake news, quoting Patrick Moore, climate change is fake news, He was one of the founders of Greenpeace. In fact, you guys said that earlier, founders and co-founder of Greenpeace, according to Google and Greenpeace itself. But what happened was, within a day or two of him appearing on Fox News, Patrick Moore, the co-founder of Greenpeace, he was digitally erased in what Patrick Moore called tech tyranny. And I did a whole exclusive report likening it back to how Joseph Stalin, in his days as the grand Soviet leader, would wipe away commissars who were no longer in favor of the party. So we actually, I have photos of Stalin with his old comrades, and then they'd fall out of favor with the party, do something that he considered disgraceful or dissent, and they'd be airbrushed out of photos. Google did the exact same thing, and I have the screen captures. Patrick Moore, before Donald Trump retweeted him, and Patrick Moore after. He was a Greenpeace co-founder, according to Google. 2 days later, he was nowhere to be found. He was taken off Greenpeace. Now, the only problem with this, and there's no accountability for Google, they won't even listen to us, but the only problem with that is Greenpeace's own websites, according to the Wayback Machine, as recent as 2005, 2007, listed Patrick Moore as one of the co-founders of Greenpeace, including his photo, bio, and here's a little interesting tidbit. Among all the co-founders of Greenpeace, all the founding members, Patrick Moore was the only PhD scientist among them. So Greenpeace had all this, and I have the screen capture shots. So this story went huge. And actually, Fox News followed up on this. I did a whole segment with them on this story. But this gives you an idea of the threat. Patrick Moore comes to Washington, D.C. to meet with Will Happer about this presidential commission as part of the group that Will Happer formed, the CO2 Coalition. You could ask Patrick Moore all about this. It's an incredible story. He came as a co-founder of Greenpeace within 24 hours after the taping and President Trump touting Patrick Moore. He's no longer a co-founder of Greenpeace, according to Google. And so anyone doing research on Google now, if you're looking up founders of Greenpeace, Patrick Moore's name isn't going to come up because Greenpeace has scrubbed their website. Google scrubbed the website. The only hope we have right now in terms of digital freedom is the Wayback Machine, the internet search engine. I don't know how much longer they can last because I have a feeling they're going to be shut down. They can't keep doing what they're doing. They're making it hard for Google to whitewash history.
I agree. And if you go to Wikipedia, I love this, Mark. If you go to Wikipedia, you could see, I did the other day, took screenshots from 2018 where in the, I believe it's the history section of Wikipedia, one of the tabs, there's many tabs, more than just the one that pops up on your computer, and you can go back and compare from then to now the changes that they made. So guys, take screenshots of these things as evidence down the road that these guys are messing with data.
Well, I use DuckDuckGo. .com to search it, and I put in Patrick Moore Greenpeace, and just a little blurb you can click on from the Greenpeace website says Patrick Moore did not found Greenpeace. He frequently
himself. He was one of the founding members, and that's the exact phrase from the Greenpeace screenshot. So yeah, he wasn't the sole founder, but he was among the founding members of Greenpeace, recognized by Greenpeace for nearly three and a half decades before they started erasing their history because they didn't like the dissent of Patrick Moore from their message and narrative.
Well, there's even a New York Times article, and I think it was from the 1980s or 1990s or whatever. I can't remember. I might be way off that, but it's on my Facebook for those of you who are on my Facebook.
It was some decade previous to now.
Yeah, where he wrote an op-ed in the New York Times about Greenpeace as the co-founder, as one of the co-founders. So, this is about erasing history, isn't it? It's about rewriting history, as Michelle Obama had warned us, that we must rewrite history.
Yes, and the key, even beyond this, I mean, this is what the tactics are willing to go to, but this gives you an idea of the threat. And let me just go back to this presidential commission again. This presidential commission on climate change, headed by Dr. Will Happer, could, from Princeton University, I think he said Yale, but he's Princeton University. He may have actually undergrad at Yale, I can't remember now, but he's from Princeton. This would be the first official United States government dissent on man-made climate change since the whole thing began. And the whole thing began, obviously, with our consent in 1988 with the UN IPCC formation, and then in earnest in 1992 with the Rio Earth Summit, which set up the framework for the whole UN climate summits that were annual, and it was just a travesty of George H.W. Bush administration, the first George Bush.
Yep.
So This would be, and so this would, this is why they're so threatened. This is why Michael Mann, the climate activist scientist, went immediately and did a big high profile attack on Patrick Moore and Will Happer at Newsweek. And here's the interesting thing, and one of my favorite attacks on Will Happer is they say, oh, well, he isn't a climate scientist, therefore he has no business making any comments like this. And I had a lot of fun with this because not only is Will Happer have 200 peer-reviewed scientific studies, but he is actually one of the foremost experts on the greenhouse gas effect. And I actually quote another Harvard physicist who explains that Will Happer's research is actually the leading expert on the greenhouse effect. Something that Michael Mann is a guy who goes around and he'll say things like, and I have these in my report, my big report at Climate Depot on him. He'll say things like, if you want to know what's happening with global warming, look out your living room window. He says the most absolutely, not just scientifically moronic things, but just moronic things you can imagine. And we're going to have to relocate major cities. So he made that claim. And so we did all the documentation. And Michael Mann basically went silent. He didn't respond to this. This was heard far and wide. Associated Press, the same week as this all happening, came out and they claimed to have found definitive evidence of man-made global warming, and it was in the U.S. temperature records, how we have more, the last 20 years we have more record highs than lows, and therefore that's proof of the fingerprint of carbon dioxide. And then, of course, I interviewed about five or six climate scientists, including Dr. John Christie, the climatologist, used to be with NASA, and it turns out, had AP used a 100-year time scale, there was much hotter days back in the 1930s and previous times, and there's actually no trend that the AP was trying to show that they cherry-picked a time frame. So there's going to be a lot of more and more alarmist garbage coming up as this presidential commission forms. And apparently I'm hearing inside information for you guys, Aaron. I'm hearing that they've already picked the numbers, they picked the members, the scientists are set. We just don't know the timeline and we don't know, you know, exactly when this is going to begin. And again, that's all subject to President Trump could get pressure inside Washington to kill it. But keep in mind, President Trump has had some great members. The best EPA administrator, of course, was Scott Pruitt, who has been just probably the most effective campaign. I think he was only in office like a year and a half. Probably the most effective cabinet member.
Michael Flynn lasted, 2 weeks? I think he was assassinated quicker than anybody by these guys. We have to take a really quick break. We're going to be back with our guest, Mark Morano, who is the author of The Politically Incorrect Guide to Climate Change, and you can find him at climatedepot.com.
Must get book.
Just the back is worth getting. We'll be right back. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
Listening to an encore presentation of We the People Radio, recorded back April 21st of this year.
Maybe it's a bad thing. You ever love someone so much you thought your little heart was gonna break into?
They did a bad thing.
They did a bad thing. Chris Isaac knew it first. Okay, so we still want to know, Mark, to support the commission, the president's commission, is there anything, I mean, people can always send letters and that kind of thing, but is there something, are you guys coordinating anything through like CFACT or through Climate Depot or any of that people could jump in on?
Yeah. Yes, and one of the things we're doing, I was able to testify at the congressional hearing from the Congressional Western Caucus House Natural Resource Committee. Actually, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez was scheduled to testify there, but there's a great coalition of congressmen in the House, a lot of them from the western area, but some of them actually from the East Coast, and we're thinking that we're doing a massive talking points document, which we'll be releasing, probably in the next 3 weeks, and then we're looking to hold some kind of congressional briefing on this. And here's the key we're trying to do is show, first of all, profile all the scientists who dissent. As you know from reading the book, The Politically Incorrect Guide to Climate Change, it wasn't hard. I mean, I just reached out to these scientists, and they're all there with unbelievable credentials. One of my favorites, Dr. Robert Gegengag, University of Pennsylvania, hundreds of peer-reviewed studies, been on almost every continent, and he's from a very left-wing school, and he even loves Al Gore, but he couldn't believe it when he saw his film. And I profile the scientists, so I'm thinking of doing a talking points report that's going to not just profile the scientists, but on every issue from A to Z, very brief sort of paragraph responses with footnotes. And we want to get this information. One of the things we need to do that's the most important is to make people comfortable to challenge climate claims. Now, the problem is many political leaders, and I include Trump administration officials in this. Well, first of all, he had some stinkers in there, like Rex Tillerson, and he had he was probably the worst. And he's got Rick Perry. You may be here surprised to hear me say that, but actually on Climate Depot, been running stories, not by me but by others, calling for the resignation of Rick Perry. Here's a guy who squandered 2 years at the Energy Department, essentially has done nothing. He's not been under attack. He's got no media. He's just sort of a placeholder there. The only thing he has said is he's supported. He and Al Gore have the same goals, and they're working together. He no longer challenges global warming. He's just trying to work with everyone. Kumbaya. It's really a travesty as people are trying to reverse some of these Energy Star restrictions. I've even met with his top levels of his staff, and they just seemed disinterested in doing anything. So he's had some stinkers. So Donald Trump's going to get nothing from official Washington. He's going to say, don't do it. This is what's happened since the beginning of the whole climate. Don't deal with it. Oh, it's not an issue. Just let it go. We don't want to be against science. It's a no-winning issue for you. But hopefully Trump will rise above that and make this happen. But one of the things we need to do is make politicians comfortable, Republican politicians comfortable to challenge the science. It's hard. And you have now a coalition led by Mitt Romney, some Republican House members, Lindsey Graham, and who was the other Republican senator? There's one who are essentially coming up with a new Green Deal light. They're going to accept most of the scientific premises of AOC and the Green New Deal, but they're going to come up with market-driven solutions, in quotes. Now, keep in mind, what's the biggest market-driven solution? That's been a carbon tax historically, and a bunch of liberal Republicans have been pushing that now for several years. So back to your question, what can people do? They need to speak out. They need to get their congressmen comfortable at town halls, everywhere else. We need to support this commission because it would give Trump administration cabinet members, the president himself, congressmen who want to oppose, give them scientific cover. That is why we need to do it. Of course, that's not a great sell. You don't want to announce that publicly because that's the effect it would have, though, is give them cover. But you need politicians to support this publicly. So anything we can do in the public to support it. Because to think that the United Nations and National Climate Assessment are speaking to the United States government, that is a joke from beginning to end. I've done so many reports on both. In fact, I have a whole chapter just on the UN and all the UN scientists who turned against it. And the National Climate Assessment, these are based on government agencies that are more on some of them 100% dependent on federal funding, and not just government agencies, but things like the National Academy of Sciences, NAS, and other groups. These groups who support these groups, they support these climate assessments, have to, because they're getting their money from the government, and they will do what the government dictates. And in this case, Trump administration had nothing to do with the report. It was commissioned with Obama holdovers, and they didn't want to be against science or seen as censorship. They knew it was a trap, so they let it go by, which I don't agree with, but I can understand why they did it. So they essentially, every department head, including EPA Energy, rubber stamped stamp that report. So that's got to be reversed. So it's, I guess I don't have a great answer on how the public can do this other than to speak out and to urge their congressman to speak out. We just have, it all comes down to Donald Trump at this point. President Trump has to pull the trigger on this, and hopefully he won't get distracted or listen to bad advice. He's got to make this happen, because without it, without a presidential commission, we are going into the next election. Now, if President Trump wins, great. We'll have 4 years of no new regulations, and we can probably officially pull out of Paris. But everything, the framework, everything's still there for the next president who wants to re-regulate everything and go beyond what President Obama did.
See, that's always the problem. We get a conservative administration in there, and then they roll back a bunch of regulation, but they haven't changed the laws. So I always think of them, it's like they got dehydrated. So the next guy comes in, you know, gets out the fire hose, waters them down, they're all back again.
Yeah, let's go. Let me get on my real soapbox here. If you go back since probably the 19-teens, it's at least 1930s, every presidential administration, no matter what rhetoric they use, has usually left the country further left than when they began.
Yep.
And let's go through it. You have FDR, who obvious reasons. Harry Truman continued FDR's legacies. And then the real tragedy, and I know many conservatives love Dwight Eisenhower, he actually ended up funding and solidifying the Green New Deal and all these welfare programs. And he did nothing to stop it. So he was part of the big, you know, corporate estate. Then you have John F. Kennedy, who came in briefly, but then Lyndon Johnson came up with the Great Society, and then President Nixon funded the Great Society and solidified all that. And then you had Jerry Ford, you had Jimmy Carter. Ronald Reagan's first term, you could argue, was a retrenchment in the first term, but by his second term, it was, you know, he was essentially managing what he had done and it was just coasting. So by the end of his term, it was sort of a wash. He had already, all sorts of things had reversed. Reagan was arguing for gun control shortly after he left office.
And regionalism. He was doing that as governor of California, trying to regionalize California, which is part of a United Nations Agenda 21 goal. Sorry, Mark.
The whole Bush. Yes, and that was, you know, probably the biggest mistake Ronald Reagan made was picking George H.W. Bush as his running mate in 1980. Then you had George H.W. Bush, and you can't say enough about how bad he was for everything. I mean, everything from taxes, regulations, to the environmental policy, to the Rio Earth Summit, the Agenda 21,
New the World Order,
for the everything. So then you go through the 8 years of Clinton, and actually you could argue that one of the most conservative periods next to Reagan's first term was Bill Clinton's second term, when he had a Republican House and Senate and a Democrat President, Bill Clinton. That partisanship sort of caused a great gridlock. We were all distracted with a sex scandal, Monica Lewinsky. That's a wonderful thing to happen in Washington. We had 75 cent a gallon gas here in Washington, D.C. We had balanced budgets. We had welfare reform. We had no real enemies. We had a, you know, pulling back. So it was actually a brief period there. And then, of course, George W. Bush comes in. He accepts the United Nations science. He rubber stamps it all. He sends his delegations every year to all these conferences. I get sick listening to the Bush administration. They're giving all the lip service to the nonsense UN claims and just playing the little game of China and India, so we won't sign on. But George W. Bush couldn't have been more forceful in endorsing this.
Ramped up the National Defense Authorization Act for anyone talking about what they call conspiracy theory, like talking about United Nations Agenda 21, sustainable development.
We will erase you.
We will erase you, right? Yeah. And you could be considered a domestic terrorist and that's in the NDAA after 9/11. So anyway, go ahead, Mark. Just like to put it in
the
little
tidbit. You had 8 years of Obama, and then you had the Republicans campaigning on repeal Obamacare. Guess what? It never happened. At least not officially. They could never even get the votes for that. Maybe they didn't have enough votes. But either way, the point
is, House, but
now you're going to have people camp. If the Green New Deal passes in 2020, if a Democrat wins, you're going to have Republicans in 22 repeal the Green New Deal, and they're going to, they may even win on that, and then they're probably going to fall short again because of Lindsey Graham and Senator Romney. It's the cycle. But after all this cycle and all the fighting and all the back and forth, if you look at the big picture,
we've continued to progress central planning and drifting leftward. Other critiques of the Trump administration have been essentially that he just hasn't pulled the trigger enough. He could have pulled the United States out of the UN framework, which would have then potentially, and depending on how legal interpretations go, required a new treaty or a ratification of a treaty to get us back in, because it was all based on the original Rio Earth Summit Treaty in 1992, the whole UN framework, which led to the Kyoto Protocol and the Paris Agreement. So he didn't do that. Instead, he announced his intent. And Al Gore correctly points out at every speech he gives that President Trump has not pulled us out of Paris. It doesn't happen until after the next election in 2020 officially. And it could be easily reversed if that's the next president's wish. So that's the problem, is Republicans play this game, but they don't actually kill the beast or actually maim the beast. All they do is scare the beast away, and then it comes back and continues its march.
Nobody wants to be mean.
If for no other reason to vote for Trump, vote for Trump, because we do not want this Green New Deal. And I guarantee, if a Democrat wins, we are going to get the Green New Deal and then some forever and ever.
Well, I want to be clear, though. Donald Trump is the greatest thing to happen to freedom since Ronald Reagan. First of all, if you compare, I never understood a conservative never-Trumper. There might be a couple out there. I understand the mainstream and the liberal Republicans, because they don't like someone
who didn't come up with the system. Well, they get all jacked up about, oh, he's just not nice. Before we launch into this, hold on 5 seconds, and we'll do a really quick break here. We're going to come back with our guest, Mark Morano. You are listening to We the People. Join us online, We the People. PeopleRadio.us.
Thought you'd change the weather, start a little storm, make a little rain. But I'm gonna do one better by the sun.
You're listening to an encore presentation of We the People Radio, recorded back in April 21st of this year.
Looking for a soul to take.
So much of anything these days, here and there. They're running out of rhinos, what do I care? Let's hear it for the dolphin, let's hear it for the trees. Be running out of nothing, you know I do for ease. It's casual entertainment, we ain't too free.
I love them.
I'm like frightened that
Dire Straits is the greatest. We just found out last night that Alabama did some kind of climate song. We didn't play it for you, Mark, but yeah. Ruined another artist for us. Can't watch any movie stars, can't listen to any music.
Yeah.
It's depressing. We're down to Ray Stevens and Dire Straits. That's all we got left. Weird Al seems to be holding out. He's still offending people. So, God love him. Okay, so let's kind of make this last chunk, since I think some people really don't understand what Donald Trump is doing. They're caught up in the media craziness of, you know, he's not nice. He said something mean. He uses Twitter.
If he just shut up.
Yeah. Tell people exactly what he has done for them that they might actually like.
Well, first of all, he's the right president for the right time. I mean, the most important thing President Donald Trump has done is he doesn't give a bleep, bleep, bleep of what the mainstream Republican Party inside Washington or anyone like that thinks. He just doesn't care. He's the first president I'm aware of in the last 50 years, even more so than Ronald Reagan. Because Ronald Reagan, if you remember, it sounds great and it's a history thing, but I actually, you know, was a volunteer in 1980 on his campaign. My brother worked in his administration. And I very closely followed that. I followed that administration. He was co-opted so many times by people like George Shultz and Donald Reagan. Maybe Donald Reagan was one of the bad ones, but he by the time end of his second term, he had been major wayward drifting. I remember conservative activists held a press conference and said Reagan, when he did the Reykjavik summit, you know, he went on the whole arms control thing, the nuclear-free world. I mean, I understand he was trying to bankrupt the Soviet Union, but signing that was all window dressing at the end. But anyway, what President Trump has done is he has beholden himself to the miners in West Virginia, to crowds in Kentucky, to Ohio crowds, to Michigan, to Wisconsin. These rallies he goes to, that's the only approval he seeks. And so for the first time in the modern era, we actually have a president who cares what the people who elected him want. And he just doesn't care what official Washington wants in any way, shape, or form. He's not subject to that kind of pressure. And that is why it is so refreshing. Even on climate, which, you know, I've done reports, Donald Trump is exactly right. You know, Donald Trump aces climate science on 60 Minutes interview. I mean, even just off the top of his head and rhetorically without even, like, studying the issue, he knows all the points. He quotes his uncle, who was a scientist, and he destroyed Leslie Stahl in that 60 Minutes interview. He's that good. He instinctively gets it. But beyond that, his insults are very important because, frankly, the way the media treats him, I mean, Bushes were eaten alive by the media. Bushes were eaten alive by the Michael Moores and the CNNs, and they accepted it. Donald Trump's not going to accept it. He pushes back, he insults, he hurls it. It's fantastic. It's exactly what's needed. You could say he's mean, he's a bully. Well, he's dealing an uphill struggle against one of the most insane, nasty, mean bullies we've ever had in the form of the mainstream media. So he's exactly what's needed as president now. Now, does he make mistakes? Does he do things that you could wish you could take back on Twitter? Yeah, all the time. But that's part and parcel with what is going on here. He's just overall so refreshing. In our lifetimes, Debbie and Aaron, I don't think we're going to ever have a president that brings a smile to our face or that rallies us on core issues of freedom and deregulation. And any other, there's just no way we're ever going to see a president like this again. And I include Mike Pence in that. Mike Pence, I don't know. If he would become president after Trump, he seems very muted, seeking a safe space. I just don't know how strong he's going to be to stand up. Because you have to to be a successful president for freedom today, you have to stand up to the Republican Party. You have to stand up to the media. You have to stand up to official Washington. You have to stand up typically many times to your own cabinet, to your own advisors. And that's what Donald Trump has been pretty much doing. I mean, the week he pulled out of the UN Paris Agreement, the advice he was getting from Rex Tillerson, stay in. The advice he was getting from Rick Perry, stay in. The advice he was getting from Bill O'Reilly on Fox News, stay in the Paris Agreement. Actually, Bill O'Reilly may have been gone by then, or I can't remember. I think he was still on Fox, but right before Bill O'Reilly was on there. My point is, even people who identify as conservative were urging him to stay in, but Donald Trump knew that he could not go face a rally of 10,000 people in Michigan or Pennsylvania and not have pulled out of the UN Paris Agreement. So he pulled out of the UN Paris Agreement. We are not going to find that in any president probably for the rest of our lifetime. And that is what is so amazing about this guy. Relish every minute we have him.
But don't forget that we're not out of the Paris Agreement yet until the 2020, the day after the 2020 U.S. presidential
and even
election.
Even that, the next president can put us right back in 2024. So that's why I wish Donald Trump had gone further. He needs, and maybe he will at some point, but they need to pull us out of the framework, and we need to make null and void the Rio Earth Summit Treaty. There's so many things we could do to make this permanent.
Okay, so tell me this. So for people who don't follow these things, why is that so important? I mean, the discussion is largely circulated around it doesn't do anything anyway. So why should people care about that?
Well, we care about it for several reasons because, first of all, we accept the UN climate reports. Then you get into judges. One of the reasons that we're in this mess, where we had President Obama able to do what he did through executive order, was because the Supreme Court had as its basis the United Nations climate science, EPA science, which is based on the UN and National Climate Assessment. They look at this and they say, well, we should be able to regulate what humans exhale from our mouth, carbon dioxide, as they now pollutant under the Clean Air Act. And so justices vote that way. So the reason it's so important is to destroy both the scientific foundation of the UN reports and these UN climate reports is we have to get out of the whole process in order to reject it so that the law of the land, so to speak, will be that we don't accept that and that federal regulation, statute, judges will no longer have to follow and look at those for reasoning. And that's what I'm hoping a presidential can pulling out of the UN and a presidential commission in tandem can actually hopefully achieve that. Now, the problem is the left is relentless, as you see with these lawsuits with kids on climate. I mean, some of the stuff is just insane. My favorite was the recent 60 Minutes, and I did a whole special on Climate Depot on this. A young teenage girl, maybe 12, 13, said that she put her ankle in global warming. And what does that mean? 60 Minutes thought, these kids aren't speaking gobbledygook. Yes, they are. She was talking about her house was flooded during heavy rain. She blamed the heavy rain on man-made global warming. And she, when she got out of bed that morning, her house had flooded, so she was up to her ankles in flood water. So she stepped in global warming before. She knows what it means to be a victim of global warming. 60 Minutes runs with this. This is the nonsense they teach. And I have a whole chapter in my book on this, on just the indoctrination of kids. It works. Kids are just completely... And here's another thing. Parents used to worry, oh, I hate to send them off to a four-year liberal college. They'll come back liberals. They're going to be indoctrinated. Hey, you don't have to worry about that anymore. Kids 12, 13, 14 are being indoctrinated by social media now. And social media, as I've already mentioned, Google, YouTube now has the disclaimers on climate skeptics. Twitter has all kinds of accusations on manipulating, whether it's on abortion issue, on climate issue. Facebook, I had a video that has now over 10 million hits. I was the poster child that they used, saying, how could Facebook allow evil denier Mark Morano to have a Facebook video, 3-minute video of over 10 million views? They went after Mark Zuckerberg for allowing this. Climate activist, the guy who authored the 97% climate consensus, actually went after Zuckerberg, the head of Facebook, and they started labeling him a climate denier. And this is how bad it's gotten. So 12, 13-year-olds, I had my daughter come home at age 14, Dad, did you see another black man was shot by a cop? I mean, she's getting all the alerts from social media, Instagram, all this stuff that's like that Black Lives Matter. That's the news view they're getting, and it's done in a snappy, exciting way. They're not watching CBS Evening News, or they're not getting this from liberal college professors because they're not in college. So the uphill battle we have to fight is so great and steep, you can't lose hope. But, you know, right now we have President Trump, and we have to relish every minute and make every minute count right now.
I always wonder if his tweets are kind of like chumming the water.
I do, too. It's like distraction.
Keeps all the sharks busy while they swim down below them. Because you look at it, it's kind of brilliant.
He distracts them so he can do
so we can go do stuff.
It's amazing that people actually don't think... when he said he was a stable genius, I believed it. And people thought, oh, what an idiot. He's this. He is probably one of the most intelligent, strategic presidents we've ever elected.
I agree. I think he's playing chess versus checkers. And most people out there are playing political checkers. And he's like...
But you watch it. It's like, squirrel, you know, and they run over there, you know, and... Meanwhile, back at the farm, you know, they're getting all this stuff done. But we have like a minute left. So in that, anything you want to promote?
Well, first of all, yes, a couple things. My book, Politically Incorrect Guide to Climate Change, will be coming out with a new edition probably in the next 6 weeks or within 2 months. It's going to have a special update with the Green New Deal. It'll include a whole extra bonus chapter on that. That's coming out. We have a sequel to the movie that'll be coming out in 2019, Climate Hustle. Climate Hustle 2, Rise of the Climate Heretic, although it's not actually called. It's Climate Hustle 2, or we'll have working titles, but we're doing a sequel that's going to be on specifically the United Nations climate agenda and the whole climate movement. So the biggest thing I want to leave you with is the Green New Deal, even if you accept the United Nations and Al Gore's climate claims, setting aside the science for a minute, climatologist Pat Michaels ran the numbers using their own, the United Nations and EPA own numbers. You wouldn't even be able to tell a temperature difference 100 years from now. You wouldn't even be able to tell the emission difference 100 years from now if the United States fully implemented the most expensive domestic policies, the Green New Deal in the history of our country. It wouldn't even have an impact. So the idea that you first want to look at cost benefit analysis. This
we
is gotta,
we got to run, Mark.
Trojan horse.
We're hitting the news.
You're awesome, Mark.
We love you, Mark Morano. Gotta come back on again.
Thank you, Aaron.
You're a rock star.
Oh yeah.